Hello and welcome to the Winding Roads Companion Podcast. I am your host, Catherine Lewiston, and I'm so pleased to have with me in the studio, Denise Benoit. Denise, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi. I'm a weaver, and I call my craft winter loom handwovens. And I'm from Milwaukee originally, but I live in Viroqua now and have lived in the area for about 17 or so years. I'm really happy to be on the Winding Roads Art Tour again this year and also being on the organizing committee, which is a really fun group of people to work with.
Yeah. It's a little odd for us to sort of like be on the microphone with each other because we have the way that I know you is like committee meetings and
being elbow to elbow.
Exactly. So this is a little bit funny, but yeah, so glad to have you on the podcast. And I'm really eager to learn a little bit more about your craft and your art and to learn a little bit more about you as an artist and as a creative. Mm-hmm. So could you tell me, maybe was there a time in your life that you remember when you first thought of yourself as an artist or a creator?
I'm not sure when I actually defined it that way. I always sort of toyed around, and as a kid I loved art class and Girl Scouts and those kind of crafts, and I would just make stuff at home and not really know what to call it.
Yeah.
But then later in life, when I decided to learn to weave, mm-hmm. if we're getting into that story, I was in my late 20s or maybe 30 or so, mm-hmm. In the late 80s, had a couple kids and was suddenly a single mom. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually kind of surprised I got into it because of all the other stresses in my life and pressures to raise my family.
That seems like maybe, I don't know, on the face of it, not an ideal time to learn sort of a time-intensive craft.
Right, so why then? Why did I choose something so complicated? But I think if it hadn't been for a weaving center that was just 3 blocks away from my apartment in Milwaukee, mm-hmm. in the basement of an elementary school, and they had classes and meetings, and you could rent a loom after you had learned how to use it and all that.
Cool.
If that hadn't been so convenient, I might not have sought it out, you know what I mean, and then driven to a class or something mm-hmm. like that. But It at that point in my life, I think I was just doing it to do something for myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
it was kind of a gift to myself to jump into something and, of course, make sure the kids were being cared for.
You know? Yeah. But that balance is so important, you know? Like when mm-hmm. you are caring for other humans and you have so many other responsibilities, like giving that gift to yourself can feel difficult, but it's so necessary.
Right, right. Yeah. And there was a great learning curve, but I felt drawn to it. Mm. And I have a tendency to try something, and if it's difficult, before weaving, when I tried something new, I would often look away if it was like really hard at first, like, oh, this is over my head, or I don't have the bandwidth for this. But that I stuck with. It was really a learning curve, and I had this there's actually a lot of mathematics and calculations that need to go into your design in order to have it all hold together.
Right.
And I was kind of math averse, you know.
Yep.
Like, I was told there would be no math. No. But I just kind of, you know, stuck with it.
Yeah.
And then learned how not to be so afraid of that and to see the beauty in what you can do when you just calculate it correctly or calculate it in a way that will give you the results that you're looking for.
Yeah. Oh, that's very cool. I'm personally resonating very hard with with your story because and I'm sure that like whoever's listening to this podcast is going to get really tired of hearing that I'm a knitter and a spinner. But those are other things that, you know, there are so many crafts out there that can be very intuitive, or can be very mathematical, mm-hmm. depending on how you slice it and how you approach it, right?
And that's also true for weaving. You can weave very much free form. So there's all different kinds of way that you can express yourself without having to put a lot of engineering into it.
Right.
But so
if
it all...
you do want a garment, or if you want stripes that line up, or, you know, then you're going to have to do a little applied mathematics.
Right, and,
Yeah, that's cool.
So then... at first, I was just in the learning phase, and I don't know when I was ready to actually call myself a weaver. Like, this is what I do. This isn't just what I do when I don't have anything else to do.
Yeah.
But this is what I do.
Yeah.
Right? So maybe that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But I actually started to learn about 35 years ago.
Sometimes I've had conversations with artists on this podcast where that moment, that kind of tipping point, feels very monumental. And then I have had conversations like the one that we're having now where that transition, that tipping point, feels almost like this little whisper. And it's like you almost don't even notice when it shifts and evolves into this is what I do.
Right.
And I think both any kind of evolution, artistic or creative evolution along that continuum is just really beautiful. And it's always so personal. That's really, really cool.
And later in life, your days kind of open up a little bit. And I have a lot more freedom to spend my days the way I want to at this age.
Yeah.
And that allows me to be less apologetic about my wanting to weave.
Yeah.
You know, there's not, I don't have to feel bad for who I had to turn away.
Sure. Yeah. And so your studio is called Winter Loom. Can you tell us a little bit about why it's called that?
Well, the reason is kind of right in the word Winter Loom, but I do have more time in the winter.
Yeah.
And you know how there's that that feeling with some people, like they're just trying to get through winter because they really want that sleeveless weather outside and to be in their gardens and all that. Well, I dive headfirst into winter, and I don't mind how long it is. It is long, of course. And, well, what do you do with those long winter nights? I realized when I was looking for what do I call this, I started to think about it, and I do more weaving in the winter. I do weave all year round.
Yeah.
But since I do more, I just wanted to put it right there, you know?
And, that's cool.
Because it just has that feeling of just... turning in, it could be blizzarding outside or not, but I have all kinds of things to keep me busy and just get right into it.
How does that change in rhythm? You know, you are kind of weaving through the winter. A lot of our art fairs and our tour is happening in the summer months, right? And so is that kind of a part of your planning, or do you just sort of like let it ride and then see what see what you have to offer, you know, by the warmer months?
Well, I really pay attention to seasonal cycles in my life and and with this craft as well. But the fact that Winding Roads Art Tour happens in June, when I decide if am I going to do the tour, that's probably in December.
Yeah.
So then at that point, it's a commitment to spend my time that way, being more in the mindset of preparing for the tour. Even if I wasn't going to be on the tour, I'd be weaving.
Yeah.
Because I always am. It's just a matter of what my focus is going to be on. And in the summer, I'm going to be doing more gardening because I love to grow things. I'm going to be going to music festivals. I don't travel a whole lot, but sometimes there's more family coming to stay with me.
Yeah,
summertime is a little bit more social.
Yeah.
and I play music as well for old time music, and so mm-hmm. there's more of that happening in people's backyards and
of course
and porches and things mm-hmm. like that. Yeah. But I like being really intentional with my weaving, but also to allow some flexibility, just to attend to what feels right. Like when it starts to, when I start to get more drawn outside, mm-hmm. Then I might save my weaving for the nighttime.
Yeah, yeah.
Get outside during the daytime when the sun's shining.
So I'll just ease cycles.
I'll ease into those changes in the,
that
in
makes
the
sense.
Shift. Yeah.
Yeah. So is there something materials, technique-wise, or I guess like form-wise that's been drawing your attention or drawing your energy lately? Any projects that you've been feeling very inspired by?
Well, I don't know about lately, but I just kind of move in and out of different curiosities about the materials. I work a lot with wool, mm-hmm. but also bamboo and pencil and cotton. Mm-hmm. I've recently done a little bit more with hemp, and that would be new for me because mm-hmm. well, hemp yarns weren't always all that available, but I got some.
Yeah,
and I started to make some guitar straps. With hemp.
Yeah,
and it has a really neat feel to it. It's kind of rough, mm-hmm. but softens with use. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about using hemp some more. Mm-hmm. It has a rustic look to it, and I have to get over the fact that there's going to be some slubs and shagginess in some of the yarns, and then it gets smooth again.
It's pretty highly textured.
It can be, but you could just have a real irregular spot,
uh-huh.
and you could cut that out and choose not to use it. Or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm still kind of getting to know it. Mm-hmm. I don't do a lot with linen. I have in the past, but that's something I'd like to do more of. Mm-hmm. And because the materials are just kind of magical. The process of learning why they're so different. In fact, it was my wish to learn more about wool mm-hmm. that brought me out of Milwaukee to the west side of the state to learn how to and then eventually raise my own sheep.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, because, I was weaving, mm-hmm. and that led me to spinning.
Yep.
And then I was spinning mostly wool, and mm-hmm. I was, like, so fascinated by why are these wools so different from mm-hmm. one another, and I just wanted to learn why this breed of sheep, why the Navajo sheep had this hard, coarse, strong mm-hmm. fiber, and the Shetland sheep had softer.
Mm-hmm.
So without much of a plan or any farming experience whatsoever.
Yep.
I went down that rabbit hole, you know, uh-huh. of just learning all about the different breeds.
Yeah.
And the wool that mm-hmm. They create and how they could be used differently. I don't remember all that I learned, but it was a fabulous experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have that farm anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm still glad I did it.
Yeah.
And I still have a lot of that wool from those sheep.
Oh, beautiful.
In the form of roving or fleece.
Yep.
And some of it is already spun.
Yeah. It is interesting, you know, I've had conversations with artists who kind of come at things from a little bit more of an analytical standpoint when it comes to materials. And, you know, when you're like thinking about woodworking and you're understanding different wood pieces that might have different rates of expansion and contraction. Mm-hmm. And so how does that inform my choice?
Yeah, I heard Tullin talking about that.
Yes. How does that inform my choice when I'm like making a table versus a chair versus a, you know, something else?
Mm-hmm.
And when you bring up the Navajo, like the churro wool, which is primarily used in rug weaving,
mm-hmm.
Versus Shetland, which on those islands, you've got these incredibly fine, like bridal, knitted bridal shawls mm-hmm. that can like, you know, supposedly like all pass through a wedding ring. Is yes. that what it is? Yeah. And so, it makes perfect sense when you actually have those specific breeds of wool, that raw material in your hand, and you're like, yeah.
This
makes perfect sense that like with this Navajo, I'm not going to be making something that's going to be next to skin.
Right.
You know, like that's just not what the fiber calls for.
That's right.
So it helps you to inform that decision.
Right. Yeah. So the materials do inform those choices. And so in my process of deciding what to make next, mm-hmm. sometimes I'm driven by the finished product that I want to make.
Yeah.
And sometimes not.
Yeah.
So if I really have the finished product in mind, then the materials really matter.
Right.
Right up front. Mm-hmm. Like if I want something to be end up to be a pillow cover.
Yeah.
It requires a certain amount of strength, and it shouldn't be something that's just gonna shred and pill and fall apart.
Yeah.
With people leaning up against it mm-hmm. or cats chewing it on it.
Yeah. Whatever. Right. Right.
Or like a table runner needs to be sturdy and flat, you know, so your glass isn't going to tip over.
You
don't want a lot of texture. You really want it to be reliably flat, you mm-hmm. know what I mean, and washable and all that.
Right.
So some of those considerations come into mind. Sometimes I'm driven by a little handful of colors that I've just been wowed by.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I was digging through my bins for something, mm-hmm. and some yarns tumbled together into the bin or into another bin, and I'm going, ooh, ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, I wanna make something that's mustard with kind of a taupe, mm-hmm. and then I'll get on this train. Mm-hmm. And I'll just keep making those colors, and I'll have a bin that's called color study, mm-hmm. and I'll just let myself obsess with certain color combinations.
Yeah,
and I'll have bins that aren't the right fibers to go together, but they're the right colors to go together, mm-hmm. and then I'll figure out later on.
Yeah,
what do I want to do with these? You know,
is color how you play?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can like hear it in your voice and like see it in the studio in your body language. You know, when you talk about color, it just like, you know, it like absolutely lights up because, you know, there's play with technique. There's a certain play with like type of fiber. But I have found that color is the way that so many people are like, oh, that's the fun zone. Like that's really where. Right. It gets playful, it gets creative, mm-hmm. and because it is so chancy, right? You can just happen.
Well, it is, and it's so personal, like mm-hmm. like what's like gorgeous to me or really exciting can be repulsive to someone else or boring, right?
Yeah.
Or wrong.
Uh-huh.
And I don't like all the rights and wrongs. I don't like colors that need to match, but I like colors that look good to me together.
Right.
And I also like to break some of those rules, but I also like a certain amount of restraint. Mm-hmm. Like I think more colors doesn't make something better.
Yeah, not necessarily, right?
I think there's an art in the restraint, mm-hmm. in the interplay of two or three colors.
Yeah.
When I stretch my tolerance for that mm-hmm. way of thinking, I might go to five or six colors. But I like to, when I do that, I like to look at them through the lens of not what's trendy right now, what are people buying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very selfish about it. It's like, I don't...
Every other artist on this tour, everybody's like, I don't even know what people like. I just make what I like to make.
Well, sometimes I think I should be thinking more that way because I want to be professional and I want to please people to a certain extent or to have them find something that they're excited about.
Well, revenue can be nice, you know.
Yeah, I mean, just to pay for the yarn. But what was my point is that I don't always want to be in that mindset of what's mm-hmm. the hot color this year.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because that's not the way I work. And I was going to say one more thing. Sometimes the way to challenge my color, what I think looks good together, sometimes I challenge myself by throwing something into that mix that I, at first, don't think belongs there.
Yeah.
That, like, there's something, if you looked at those six colors, mm-hmm. which is the one that you would take out?
Yeah.
And right. just have it just be those five colors. And there's always one that mm-hmm. anyone would go to that one color and get rid of that color, right? Mm-hmm. So I challenge myself to just break the rule a little bit and throw yeah. something in mm-hmm. that's a surprise or something is slightly wrong about that.
And do you find that you come around to that combination, or do you find that in the end you're like, yep, I was my initial instinct to throw that color out was correct?
Sometimes
is that nice? Okay.
both ways, but I'm glad that I took that risk. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's only yarn, right?
That's true.
And sometimes the things that turned out in ways that I am a little disappointed in, but still glad I did it, it might be an item that 3 years later, someone will see that on my rack and go, oh my God, I love this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that just tickles me, you know?
It's amazing how time and just like the right person can mm-hmm. just make something click.
Yeah.
I had that experience recently with a sweater that I knit that was gorgeous. I was very proud of it. And I put it on and it wasn't mine.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, it just kind of sat around and I didn't really wear it. And then I met somebody at Utopia at the knitting group and I was like, I think I have your sweater. And when it kind of transferred into her hands, it was like, yep, uh-huh. yep, that was yours.
Uh-huh.
I knit that for you. I didn't know it, but I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's
so
great.
I'm wondering, you said you've been in Winding Roads Art Tour for 4 years now.
Yeah, the first couple of years I did it, I had known about it from the beginning, but just wasn't ready to jump in and start doing it. So the first years I did it were the after COVID years, 2022 and 23.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, in 22, I was still living down in Gays Mills.
Okay.
And I knew Joe Schwarty and Christine Meyer, who are down there.
Yes.
So I did it at their place as a guest there. Mm-hmm. And we had so much fun doing it. I just camped out on their front lawn.
Yeah.
And that was my intro into it. And,
lovely.
And loved it. And then, well, the second year I did it there again, but I lived in Viroqua at that point, but I still drove down there to do it with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they are who they are, and I love being with them.
Yeah.
And then last year I did it at my own home here in Viroqua,
mm-hmm.
and was very successful, but it was not satisfying to me because it was so busy and so crowded in mm-hmm. my little home.
Yeah.
And I wanted to answer people's questions. I had both looms with things on to demonstrate. And it was really hard to talk to people mm-hmm. and see who was actually buying that thing that I just spent 2 months making, you know?
Yeah.
So things were flying off the racks a little too fast for my comfort.
Uh-huh.
And so this year I decided not to do it in my own home. And there's, you know, pros and cons with everything. But I was talking to Charna Schwartz, who lives out at Key Waden Farm, and that's where her studio is.
Mm-hmm.
And she invited me to do it out there by her.
Very cool.
So that's what I'm going to be a little harder to find, but please find me. You know?
Yeah. And that's out past Viola. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So you'll have the experience of, I think, probably the unique experience of having done the tour so many times in so many different spots.
Yes.
I think that's cool.
Now, I won't be able to demonstrate unless I bring, I don't know,
like a smaller
my spinning wheel, but I don't really have my smaller looms that I used to have, a rigid heddle loom, which I wasn't really using, so I don't have that anymore. I don't have a smaller tabletop loom, which is what I started with back in the 80s. I have two full-size floor looms.
Yeah.
One's in the living room of my house, and one's in the back bedroom. It's just a little three-bedroom 1950s house. So the back bedroom is kind of tight, but that's where my big loom is.
Yeah.
And all most of my materials.
Yeah, so kind of hard to move.
Yeah, so last year, I mean, I had like 20 people in my hallway trying to get back and forth between the living room and the main room, and people with walkers. And
I can see that logistically that would feel very challenging for you,
And people probably do this tour in smaller spaces, but it was a little overwhelming.
Yeah.
So I don't want to dwell on that, but I won't be able to demonstrate so much, but I think it'll still work out really well.
Yeah, you'll be able to take the time to really connect with the folks who come through, which it feels like that's really what you value.
Yes.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Well, as we wrap up this conversation, are there any last words that you'd want to share with our audience? Obviously, the Winding Roads Art Tour is coming up June 7th and 8th.
Yes.
And you'll be out at Keewaydin Farms.
Right. Well, some of the things I make are... Well, like I said, sometimes I don't know what it's going to be until it's done. But if I'm just making something, I will just make a big piece of cloth and then realize what I'm going to make it into.
Yeah.
But some of those things turn into ponchos or shawls.
Yeah.
But I'm learning to just sew them together in different ways.
Nice.
So it might be one long rectangle that's sewn together on one end. Mm-hmm. It might be two rectangles sewn together, so there's a point in the front and the back.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out all these different shapes and ways to make body wraps and wearable textiles.
Yeah.
Scarves, towels, table runners, pillows. Guitar straps now, and those kind of things.
Beautiful. And you're wearing one of your creations today.
I am. I don't often wear my own work because sometimes it just feels like I'm showing off or something.
Oh, you should own it. If I made work as beautiful as you do, I would wear it every day.
Thank you.
It really is gorgeous. It's this kind of red palette.
This is a very fine wool, and it's kind of see-through, so it's woven in a kind of a lace weight of wool, and with reds and browns, and I really love working with this wool.
Yeah, it's perfect for this weather as well. We're having a warm spell these days.
Yeah, so. But it's lightweight enough to work well out like on a summer evening too.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. Well, thank you so much for joining me today in the studio,
Denise. Yeah, thank you. Please look for me on the tour.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Catherine.